Hi, and welcome back to Let's Talk Forage with Alison and Chris. This week, we've got another special episode for you. We're interviewing the managing director of Spreadex Trading. His name is Tom Salmon. He's been in the business for a very long time, and he's a really interesting guy. I think you guys will find this one really good. As always, if you have any questions, you can send them to us at podcast@fxscouts.com. Or get in touch with us on social media. So that's on LinkedIn, we're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Thanks so much and enjoy.
Hey, Chris, how's it going?
Hey, Alison. Yeah, I'm okay, thanks. How was your Easter weekend?
It was wonderful, actually. We had a really good time with family and friends. And yesterday we went off to visit the biggest pineapple in South Africa. I don't know that the Eastern Cape is, it's the biggest sort of pineapple farming area in the country. And so we went and visited the big pineapple. It's literally about a 2 or 3 story high pineapple. And then you can
go around
and go and go and check out the history.
I thought you were talking about an actual pineapple for a second.
Oh. Yeah. No, it's a steel structure. It was constructed in 1990, but very interesting. So it talked about the whole history of pineapple farming in the Eastern Cape.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So we bought a few pineapples and some pineapple jelly.
I bet you did.
Is, oh, to die for.
Oh, good for you. That does sound fun. Yeah, it was good. I was in Malaga in Costa del Sol, but it was raining the entire time. And now I've come down with a cold, but you know, such is life. I'm fine. I'm good.
You always come back from Malaga with a cold, it seems.
I do. And such is life. But I'm okay. I'm a great Alison. So, I think we've got a special episode today, don't we?
Yeah. Today we've got a special guest, Tom Salmon. Is that how I say your surname, Tom?
That is correct.
It's the fish. Okay.
That's right. Yeah.
He is managing director of Spreadex Trading, which is a spread betting and CFD broker based in London. And we just wanted to find out a bit about your own background and how you got into trading and when you joined Spreadex and a little bit about the company itself as well.
Yeah, sure. And thanks for having me on. So Spreadex were founded in 1999. I joined in 2007. I joined straight out of university. So Spreadex is my only job. I did a maths degree in Manchester, where quite a lot towards the end of my degree, I did quite a lot of finance based modules, option strategies, that kind of thing that I was interested in. So when I left university after a bit of traveling, pursuing a career in finance and trading seemed, you know, the logical step for me. And I joined Spreadex shortly after, then in 2007. That was quite a turbulent time to join because a year later we had the financial crisis,
banking crisis.
Yeah. So the business and I guess the industry really did go through a bit of change over those few years. You know, from the kind of clients we had pre-crash and then the landscape post was quite a lot different. And then I started to get more of a senior position shortly after the crisis, around 2010, before being made managing director during the COVID pandemic in 2021, I think. So that is basically how I joined Spreadex and my interest. I mean, I wasn't one of those kind of teenagers who was reading the FT, picking stocks and stuff like that. I'd be lying if I said I was that. But I was always kind of numbers-based, maths-based, hence why I did a maths degree. And I like working with people as well. So it's those aspects of the job that I like most. And obviously, over a career now, Spreadex for 17 years, I've developed, a greater interest in the markets over that period as well, myself.
So you came at it from more of a technical side, I guess, the trading.
Yeah, I guess I'd say that. I was one of those kind of classic people at uni who wasn't entirely sure what I was going to do next.
Yep.
And then, like I say, I started to do, it was particularly options modules around Black Scholes theory, stuff like that I really did interest me. I mean, you won't be able to test my knowledge too much on it now, so I've long since forgotten all that kind of stuff.
But that
kind of sparked an interest and gave me a direction, which I pursued, and I ended up at Spreadex, and I've been here ever since.
It must have been a really interesting time to join. I mean, I know it was catastrophic for the global economy, but starting in 2007 and seeing the tip into the crisis and seeing the markets up close.
It was a really interesting time. And whilst when I joined SpreadX, like I said, I wasn't kind of trading, wasn't my whole life, far from it. I've mm-hmm. always been very interested in current affairs, politics, mm-hmm. and kind of being able to link those to, you know, that kind of current affairs interest when it's now like every single day the markets will lead in the 10 o'clock news. So being able to link those two really was really interested in. So it was definitely an interesting period. I was glad not to have a great deal of responsibility at the time.
Indeed.
being new to the company. So there was lots of more senior people than me at the time to worry about all the important stuff.
But then you were more senior when the COVID crisis hit, when the pandemic hit.
Yeah, and I think the lessons of the business learned from the financial crisis in 2008 and the fallout from that really did stand us in good stead for when COVID came along and that kind of volatility. Obviously, in the periods between 2008 and 2020, we had volatile episodes, Brexit, etc. But the first move in COVID in March 2020, when you had like the major stock indices down 30-40%, mm-hmm. Stocks cratered, huge volatility in FX. For a sustained period of time, that was the most we'd seen since 2008. So lessons we took from 2008 in how to manage our risk, how to run our risk, how to manage our clients' risk, mm-hmm. and all those kind of things really did stand us in good stead. And, you know, I guess the most challenging period of the COVID time was just relocating everyone to home working and getting used to that. And that was more of the challenge. The systems we had in place were pretty robust by that time.
Yeah, no, it was a really interesting time, as you said, like the COVID. It felt almost apocalyptic, didn't it?
Yeah, there really was a period in, I guess, 4 years ago, pretty much now, where mm-hmm. there was a week or two period where it really did feel like the world was going to end. There was kind of talk of markets just having to close for prolonged mm-hmm. periods of time and what would the implications of that be. But then things, I guess, did turn around pretty quickly after that, didn't they? We, you know, the market recovered in almost a V-shape. And obviously, it took a while for life to get back to normal, but we settled into home working from a work perspective a lot easier than I ever thought we did. Like when there was the first few conversations about maybe people are going to have to start working from home, you know, it's a bit of a head in hands moment. How on earth is this going to work? But that was fine. We probably made, you know, 5 years of progress in about 2 weeks.
Amazing.
Yeah. So that was fine. So, I guess, then the most challenging thing actually after the initial COVID shock was then kind of, I guess, the meme stock frenzy about a year later when...
Oh, of course, yes. What a thing that was. Incredible, no?
But exactly, then from that perspective, did you see a lot of people sort of coming online and start trading just because they, you know, they were now at home and a lot of people had lost their jobs and that kind of thing? Did you notice an uptick in your... Well.
Yeah, absolutely we did. So volatility in the markets always, your existing clients obviously become more active and you get a lot of new clients as well. That started from March 2020, but then went into a bit of a lull over the summer months. But from the point I hope I get my memories correct here, but from the moment in the UK, at least when the vaccine was announced, I think in November 2020, and the markets from that point really started to shoot upwards mm-hmm. through to the January 21, Feb 21, when you had things like GameStop and all those other stocks.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. That was a bit of a frenzy, really. Lots of new accounts, all looking to trade the same stock.
Yeah.
And whilst on one level, that can sound very attractive to us as a broker. Obviously, when you're a leveraged broker and you're offering CFDs and spread bets mm-hmm. in the UK, that comes with its own complications. Yeah. And, you know, the counterparties we use to hedge out our risk. So, you know, when clients are buying GameStop, we're buying GameStop ourselves on our own counterparty broker accounts. Yeah. That has a load of implications that get pretty complicated pretty quickly. So on one hand, it's a bit of a double-edged sword, those periods. We like volatility, but when it gets extreme, you know, you're just trying to keep the train on the track, really.
But especially when it's obviously a bubble, you know, it's really difficult to manage your risk. No, I can imagine.
Well, just last point on that is we, as part of our regulations, we offer what's called balance protection. Clients, retail accounts of ours, can't lose more than they deposit. So if you've got clients shorting GameStop and it's just going up and up and up, that's quite a dangerous aspect of our risk that we have to manage there as well.
Yeah, it's something we hear about a lot. I mean, it's we do a lot of work in South Africa, don't we, Alison? And there's a lot of brokers out there. They're not required by the local regulator to provide negative balance protection, but a lot of brokers do anyway. But they've recently started pulling it, but just because, you know, people are abusing it, and they do. But I know that the FCA requires it, doesn't it, for all brokers?
Absolutely, yeah. So it was the ESMA, the European regulator, who first introduced it in 2018, but then all the local regulators, FCA and German regulator, whatever else, all just adopted the same. And obviously since Brexit, the FCA just kept it in place anyway. So yeah, it's one of the requirements for retail accounts, and any account that opens with us in the first instance is called what's called a retail account. They have balance protection.
Yeah, no, it's really good for beginners. Yeah. People are just starting out.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. It's the right thing to do. Yeah, mm-hmm. And interrupt there, but it's a really good example where good regulation can work. Really, it's something looking back that the industry probably should have introduced themselves.
Yeah,
but it took the regulator to introduce it, but it's worked really well, and I think it's a really good feature. A really good safety feature for clients as well.
And similarly, the leverage restrictions, you know, the 30-1. I mean, I know professional clients can get higher leverage in that, but, you know, that's one of the restrictions that I think has also made a big difference, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, being able to manage their risk a bit better. These offshore regulators, you know, with the 3,000-1 with some of the brokers, I mean, it's just, you know, insane.
No, absolutely. And again, the leverage restrictions came in at the same time as the balance protection in mid-2018. And I guess COVID was the first real kind of example of where that really helped. And just in general, clients not being able to leverage up as much, but also have the protection that they're not going to have to, you know, all of a sudden find a load more money to pay into their brokerage. They're two really good protections that I think have really worked for clients and helped them.
Hey, thanks for tuning in and a warm welcome to our new listeners. I'm Alison.
And I'm Chris, and we both work for FX Scouts, which is a global Forex education site and a broker marketplace.
Our mission is to decrease the number of people who get scammed or lose money in Forex trading by providing Forex trading education. We highlight serious brokers and we assist Forex traders in finding the best regulated broker for their needs.
Yeah, and we have sites all over the world, so just do a search for FX Scouts in your region, or failing that, you can head over to fxscouts.com, which is our main website. You can also follow us on social media. We're on Facebook and Instagram, we're on Threads, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Alison regularly publishes educational videos on YouTube, so check those out. Thanks so much, and now back to this week's episode. So, can you tell us a little bit about SpreadX? I mean, there's comes from a slightly different background than a lot of CFD brokers, because of the spread betting thing. Is that how it was started? Was it more of a betting company?
So founded in 1999, like I said earlier, and we have a sports side of the business as well. Spread betting is a unique product to the UK. So, for example, all our main competitors in the UK market, IG, CMC, for their UK clients, the vast majority of their revenues from the UK market will be spread betting also. So it's spread betting isn't something unique to SpreadX. It's just unique to the UK market, I guess. But I get the unique thing to SpreadX, or certainly unique now, is that we have both a sports betting side of the business and then a financial trading side of the business as well. And that's been since inception in 99. Both businesses have grown over the years, both strong. They dovetail very well. It gives us great diversity as a business. You know, we're more diverse. We're not just reliant on financial market volatility. So, for example, this summer, if the markets are quiet, we've got a sports business and a big football tournament, you know, and that can happen vice versa. I guess the main difference between the two businesses is the sports calendar is obviously set in stone. Everyone knows
it is, yeah.
you know, when it's going to be busy and when it's not, you know, when the big tournaments, the big games are on. Whereas the financial markets, you is much more of an unknown. Mm. So kind of planning on the sports side of the business is a lot easier than the financials because of that, I guess.
So you, just on that note, you find that traders or spread bettors or traders sort of diversify their portfolios that way. They'll spread bets if there's not enough movement in the markets like we've seen recently.
Well, the main reason someone would spread bets in the UK is for the tax advantages, the capital gains tax advantages. So, and spread betting really is, I mean, and some clients can get this mixed up. It really is a CFD trade, but it's called a spread bet in the UK for the tax advantages. So you are still speculating on underlying market movements up or down. It just happens to be called a spread bet in the UK for those tax advantages. And those tax advantages for, if you win money at least, obviously, can be quite significant.
Yeah.
Capital gains tax rate now at 18%, and that has been higher. And, you know, with the volatility we've had in the UK government, you know, policy seems to change each year. So, you know, that is the main reason that is the main reason a UK client at least would spread bet, and a spread bet to kind of international listeners is essentially just a CFD for the UK market.
Right. And it's overseen by the FCA, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. And all the regulations are exactly the same. You know, what is in the regulations for CFDs applies to spread bets and vice versa. Okay. So they are incredibly similar products.
Okay. And if I open an account at SpreadX, I can switch back and forth between CFD trading and spread betting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So in the account opening process, you can select whether you'd like a spread bet account, CFD, or both. And
okay,
you will get a unique account number for each, and you can easily toggle between the two and do as you please.
That's fantastic.
And can you spread bet across all assets that you, you know, if you can CFD on one, can you spread bet? Is it sort of the same across all?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. It's really good to know. I think, as I said, a lot of our listeners, they, you know, they're used to CFD trading and how it is. And I think spread betting is a really interesting thing, especially, I mean, maybe a motivation to move to the UK. For some traders, can get involved in spread betting instead.
There's plenty of reasons not to want to move to the UK, but maybe spread betting can swing it.
Spread betting can swing it. And you've recently started integrating your trading platform with TradingView.
That's right. Yeah.
What was the idea behind that? I mean, I know traditionally you've had your own proprietary platform, web-based, an app. What was the idea behind moving into the TradingView?
I think it was an opportunity that presented itself over the pandemic. Obviously, TradingView has been around for a while now, but lots of trading-based platforms became very popular during the pandemic. So it's an opportunity that presented itself in about 2021. I think, and we saw it as a fairly easy, not too much friction integration to just dip our toe into third-party platforms. Mm-hmm. We've not had a MetaTrader integration, and that can that's always something we've kind of wrestled back and forth with. There's quite a lot more work with the MetaTrader integration, whereas TradingView presented itself, it was a bit more straightforward for us. So it's a way for us to kind of give something a go and see what would happen. Fairly low cost integration, so it was ultimately seen as kind of an opportunity on that basis that we should take.
How has the uptake been with TradingView? I mean, I assume a lot of, you know, there's so many users on TradingView. I would think it would be a very good move for you guys.
Yeah, well, what you definitely see on TradingView, unlike some other platforms, so essentially they're just another affiliate partner, I guess, ultimately. Mm. You know, but with the added benefit that you can also place trades on that platform. So we still feature on a list of brokers on the TradingView platform. There will be ourselves alongside some other brokers as well, and users of TradingView can obviously look at each other's different platforms and pick which broker they wish to open an account with. But mm-hmm. what we do see is there's much more intent from users on TradingView. So whereas on other platforms you might get people clicking and opening an account, but then not ultimately depositing and trading, there's a lot more intent throughout the funnel for clients that come by TradingView. They are on a platform for trading that's got every single bit of information you could possibly need, and then it has this broker aspect on the side, and you know, so the people there seem, no, they have the mindset, I'm looking for a broker to, I've got my own trade ideas, I know what I want to do, I need to find a broker, and I wish to use the TradingView charts and the platform to place those trades. So that's definitely what we see on the TradingView platform.
But just on that note, I mean, you can also spread bet on TradingView. So I would have thought that would, you know, allow you guys to stand out with the brokers that TradingView has partnered with.
Absolutely. Yeah. So on the spread bets, it's actually good timing for that question. Our initial integration with TradingView was CFDs only. That was just a quicker way to get to market, basically. And given CFDs have got the kind of the international recognition, we picked CFDs. We are imminently going to launch our spread betting integration. So that's, I mean, look, if you'd asked me 2 weeks ago, I would have said it's 2 weeks away. If you asked me today, unfortunately, it's 2 weeks away. But hopefully at some point it will only be 2 weeks away. We're expecting it any day now, really. And you're dead right. That'll be a real kind of differentiator for us on the platform there.
Yeah, I think it will. I mean, Alison, I know you use TradingView a lot. You really like it.
Yeah, I love TradingView. I mean, it's fantastic. The functionality is just second to none. It's so, you know, it's so much more modern, and it's easy to use. And yeah, the features and the functionality is great.
Well, that's another reason why we decided to go with the TradingView route, because quite often we're not charting experts. We're a broker, so we have our own charts on our platform. They're functional, but we're not experts on that. And for the kind of the cohorts of clients who want all that functionality, all that extra stuff, integrating with TradingView is essentially outsourcing the expertise to people who do know what they're doing and have provided this product that, you know, millions of people obviously like using. So now they can utilize that, but still place their trades with us as their broker.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I just wanted to dive a little bit into the state of the market for 2024. It's something we've spoken about quite a lot ourselves. But we've obviously seen a lot of low volatility and low volume in the Forex market since the beginning of the year. What from your perspective is causing this? And do you think the volatility is going to increase anytime soon?
I think it inevitably will at some point. When that will be, I mean, there's some kind of signposted events later on in the year. So 2024 is very much a year of the election. So that will obviously potentially create some volatility. It's hard to predict exactly when that would be. There's lots of the very nature of the market is there are unknown unknowns that come along. And create a volatility. So it's very hard to kind of predict when that will be. But we definitely have, for as long as I can remember, we've had a prolonged period of quite low volatility.
Has that affected your CFD numbers? I mean, it's something we've sort of noticed that volumes have dropped for brokers across the board. Is that something you guys have seen as well?
Absolutely, it has. So you'll see with all the listed companies that have to report to market, their earnings, IG, I think a month or two ago, volumes down quite significantly for them. And we're no different. Where we are perhaps different is we have more of our revenues come from overnight financing. We have quite a lot of clients who trade equity. It's a bigger proportion of our revenues comes from equities, which is less impacted by volatility. That's just clients holding stocks, holding a portfolio of stocks where they will pay overnight financing because it's a leveraged portfolio. So the market being at all-time highs in the US, the FTSE has broke 8,000 in the UK. Our client stock portfolios are very high and the financing revenues we get from that is high. So whilst we're no different than anyone else, we are affected by lower volatility. At the same time, we do have this the payoff of the financing revenues we earn. We typically find that we don't... When the market's very volatile, we don't have the same upside that other brokers have. But then when there's a drop off in volatility, we don't suffer to the downside as much as others. We're kind of more steady in the middle, we find.
Oh, that's great. That probably also comes from experience and being around for as long as you guys have.
I think it is. I think it's knowing, when to, in terms of things like marketing spend, and things like that, when to rein it in and when you need to really kind of, when volatility does, like being nimble enough to be able to react to the changing market. There's no point. When people are just switched off from the market, you can spend as much as you want in marketing spend. People just aren't interested. There's no reason for them to trade. They're not going to, but then you need to be able to react quickly when, in my 17 years now, what I've learned is the market will always provide interest and opportunity at some point. And when that comes along, you're just going to be nimble enough to react to that.
Yeah.
Speaking of interest and opportunity, I mean, I don't know if you've been following, I'm sure you have, the Bitcoin and crypto news over the last few months. We've seen the prices go through the roof. I mean, I know the FCA banned crypto CFD trading for non-professionals in the UK a few years back.
That's right, yeah.
Is that the same for spread betting as well? They're also banned for spread
betting? That's right, yeah. So spread betting, yeah, is the class as a derivative in the same way as the CFDs are.
Right.
So, yeah, I can't remember exactly when that was, but like you say, 2 or 3 years back, crypto derivatives were banned in the UK. We still have them for our professional traders, like you say. Mm-hmm. We've been taking quite a lot of flow in those in all the different coins we offer the last few months. And also where we do see activity and retail clients can trade as well are the crypto affiliated stocks like MicroStrategy and some of the others where, you know, they're very much obviously wedded with the price of Bitcoin and crypto more generally.
That's really interesting. So they're actually, you still can get some kind of access to crypto even if you can't chain trade the crypto itself.
Exactly. And so it's very much in the single stocks. Unfortunately, the ETFs that were also launched the start of this year are also banned for our retail clients, but not
really?
But not some of the single stocks.
And you find a lot of interest among your professional traders still in crypto. Has that held up?
Yeah, we do. I think it's, you know, just people looking to speculate on the price of crypto. Our clients aren't kind of crypto evangelists or anything like that.
No.
They're just people who, you know, for a bit of fun on the side, like you say, given that our professional clients are typically bigger clients with bigger size, bigger deposits on their account, and it's people just looking to speculate on what is an incredibly volatile asset.
Yeah, tell me about it. It's something that we work a lot with brokers, with a lot of our people who listen, you know, they're based in countries without as tight regulation. In some of these places, you can get crypto, you can get leverage in crypto, 100 to 1 or 200 to 1.
Yeah, and anyone doing that is a particularly dangerous.
It is.
you'll find people, even though Bitcoin might double in a few months, people have been buying all the way up will still find themselves losing money because they always get stopped out and a bit of a dip down. So it's, I think trading on crypto with any kind of significant leverage is not for the faint-hearted.
Especially if you don't have negative balance protection.
Well, exactly, yeah.
Which often comes hand in hand with very high leverage on crypto.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what we find in our experience. So, yeah, I mean, so as we, you know, we were talking about crypto there. I mean, I know in outside of the UK, crypto attracts a lot of beginners because they realize they can go long or short on crypto when they start CFD trading. Obviously, that's not really the case in the UK, but, you know, what assets would you say, what if I was a beginner and I was just starting to trade in the UK and I was thinking about trading, what's your advice for beginners who are looking to start here now in 2024?
My advice is always start small, mm-hmm. understand what you're doing, be very careful of the leverage is something that can be used to your advantage, but you need to understand it. You need to understand your maximum downside. But I think absolutely, and I think we touched on it earlier with the regulations were introduced in 2018. They definitely helped with that in as much as previously before 2018, you could see new accounts perhaps trading in too big a size than they perhaps should. And if they don't get the timing correct, the account can get wiped out. So I think it's absolutely my main advice would always be trade small. Don't try and spread yourself across too many markets, mm-hmm. Trying to be a master in everything. You don't need to kind of know where the 50-day moving average is in 50 different markets. You know, just focus on one or two to begin with. And like I say, trade in small size. And, you know, bear in mind that you're not always going to be able to time the markets perfectly. Don't worry too much about entry. If you think you've got the right trade, enter it. Don't worry too much about having to time it perfectly, and just go from there.
No, that's interesting advice. What strategies do you recommend then?
You know, look, there's lots of information out there on the web, isn't there? There's lots of people providing courses or this, that, or the other. I guess ultimately people can make up their own minds up about how they start. I think very much, like I say, just at the risk of repeating myself, is very much just kind of pick one or two markets and start small and kind of read up as much as you can, and you'll find your own way, I think.
Yeah, that's good advice.
What do you see as the most interesting assets to trade in 2024? I know you guys have got a full range. You've got indices and ETFs, and you know, we've touched on crypto, forex. Where do you see you know, looking over the year? Obviously we've got very low volatility in forex at the moment, but you mentioned there briefly that indices in both US and the UK are, you know, hitting records.
Yeah. So they're obviously been very popular. What you tend to see people do, particularly on the stock indices, the NASDAQ now, particularly the Dow Jones, are kind of S&P are at or close to record highs. You typically find people going against the trend there, looking to short those, which has obviously not been the best strategy the last few months.
No, I was going to say that doesn't sound like a very good strategy at all.
But then you do quite often get people, you know, possibly looking to hedge a stock portfolio, mm-hmm. by selling the index. I mean, I guess the reason particularly the US markets are at or close to all-time highs is very much because of AI stocks, mm-hmm. and all the things around that there. Nvidia are obviously kind of the flavor of the month. Almost seems disparaging. They're obviously far bigger than that, but mm-hmm. the stocks like that have created a hell of a lot of interest amongst our clients, and they are typically where our clients will go with the trend. You won't get many people looking to short Nvidia. They might look to short the S&P, but they will buy Nvidia and other stocks like that. So I guess ultimately what makes market, but you seem to have this debate now, particularly with tech stocks and tech valuations. Is this a repeat of 2000 and the tech bubble? I don't really have any comments on that, but you kind of have two different divides of people, some saying yes and others say no, and that is what makes market, and that's definitely what's creating a lot of interest.
Yeah, it does seem a bit like the never-ending tech rally at the moment, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I take a lot of interest reading all the articles and comment pieces on that. I'm not entirely sure you read one article by someone who's saying, well, no, absolutely, these valuations are still quite low. And you think, okay, I'm quite persuaded by that argument. And then you read the complete other opposite and you think, oh, I'm quite persuaded by that as well. Yeah. Kind of classic sitting on the fence. But that's creating a load of interest amongst our clients.
And I saw you guys have a really unusual number of high number of ETFs as well to trade.
Yeah, so ETFs are something definitely growing in popularity. They seem to make the news or the financial news at least a lot more. Obviously, things like the crypto ETFs have kind of more broadly kind of made them more prominent. So we see that as a way of kind of creating a bit of a niche for us. I appreciate there's other platforms that have lots of ETFs as well, but there's others that don't. So we try and have as many as possible on there. It's quite a process to keep up with it, to be honest, and make sure you're up to date there. But that's something we spend quite a lot of time doing.
Yeah, I think especially a lot more savvy traders would be really interested in that.
People absolutely, yeah.
Some experience with maybe even buying ETFs themselves, investment in ETFs. I think I'd be really interested in your range of ETFs.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask, Tom, you know, Spreadix obviously, you know, it has got a big focus in the UK market. Do you guys have any thoughts of expanding internationally or sort of just expanding further than you have? Or what is Spreadix's sort of ambition?
Our ambition is we are definitely looking at other territories. That's something we have been doing in the last 6 months or so. The Middle East, for example, the UAE is the fastest growing CFD market and seems to provide a lot of opportunities. We see that as, someone might tell me I'm wrong on this, but our perception is that is fairly similar to the UK market in as much as you've got a lot of finance, it's a lot of expats, so there's a lot of UK people out there already and others obviously as well. Yeah. But there's a lot of finance professionals, obviously Dubai, Abu Dhabi, lots of hedge funds, different kind of financial institutions going out there and growing, and they're kind of in the same way that they exist in the London market. So we see that as quite a nice fit for us, and that's something we've been looking at quite significantly over the last few months, alongside some other territories as well.
And if you do expand into those territories, what does that mean in terms of FCA regulation? Would you have to sort of get the DFSA on board, or?
Yeah, exactly. So it would be getting an additional regulation, and there's kind of various options in that specific region, but it would be absolutely doing that.
Yeah, no, there has definitely. I mean, we've seen a large uptick over the last year or two in trading across the Middle East and North Africa region. And I think you're right, specifically the UAE, a really educated trading populace there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, we see when we've been kind of doing our research, we in some other regions, mainland Europe, for example, it's a lot more dispersed. The revenue per client is a lot lower, which suggests it's more of a retail audience. Whereas the UAE, it makes sense there would be more of a professional audience there because of the types of businesses there, some of the wealth over there as well. And that is, like I said, that's what we're familiar with in the London market. And we think we could provide what we do to clients in the UK, in the London market, in the UAE as well.
Well, best of luck with that.
Thank you.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
It's very competitive.
Yeah.
It is. Yes, it is very competitive. And you said some other locations as well. I mean, can you talk about those yet? Or?
Yeah, we're kind of in fairly early stages. There's nothing as pronounced as the UAE. Look, there's some kind of in the Far East and others, but nothing quite as progressed.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the UK is also, from our experience, a very competitive market. So I think once you've mastered the UK, I'm sure you'll do well in other regions as well.
Yeah, well, the UK, yeah, it absolutely is. It's very competitive, and it seems to get even more competitive by the year. And we have our own niche in the UK. And whenever you look at kind of this independent surveys of the industry, and we all seem to exist in our own little spot on the graph. Mm. And we think, you know, that can be both a good or a bad thing, I guess. But I at least we do have a niche, and I think that's something we can look to capitalize on in different territories as well.
Yeah, I think having a niche is essential in the UK. So,
yeah.
So well done.
Thank you.
And like I said, I mean, a lot of the listeners to this are our traders who are just starting out. You know, they come listen to us. We talk about a lot of, you know, technical analysis and how to do fundamental analysis. But one thing that we touch on a lot is trading psychology, which is, you know, understanding yourself and wider market psychology. And it's often overlooked, but we find it's really fundamental to successful trading. And I was wondering if you've experienced that yourself. I mean, have you ever experienced of mastering your own trading psychology? And you know, why is it important to keep your emotions in check when you're trading?
It absolutely is important, and it's a critical part of being a successful trader investor.
Mm-hmm.
I do have experience myself. I'm not a day trader. I'm not trading each and every day, but I do. I have traded over the years and got my own investment portfolio as well. And I can definitely, when I reflect and look back, I can definitely see where I've made mistakes and where I perhaps could have done things better. I think when it comes to trading, I think the first thing I would say is if you're having to kind of live your positions where you're having to check them minute by minute, then it perhaps suggests that you're trading too big. If you do find yourself doing that, you perhaps consider lowering your size. If you've entered the position with a very clear reason, with a very clear strategy in mind, whatever that might be, and like we touched on before, there's plenty of different strategies you can take and reasons you can enter a trade, then you've just got to have the faith. You've got to have the kind of the clear end. What is my end goal here? Obviously, you want it to be a profitable trade. It can't always be the case. But I think having the ability to have the confidence that you entered the trade for a particular reason and then being able to just sit back and disassociate yourself from that position, I think is very important.
You find that concept is teachable? I mean, is that something that you can train, or does it come with time and experience?
I think it comes with time and experience. I think there's advice you can give, and some people are better than others at taking advice and learning lessons quicker. So I don't want to kind of suggest you can't teach it whatsoever. I think it can be a lot of it is to do with personality type and then also experience over time. Personally, that'd be without thinking too deeply about it right now, I think that is my instinct.
Yeah. No, I think you're probably correct there. I mean, it's why we always tell beginners, you know, the first thing you really need to do is get a trading plan and stick to it.
Yeah.
You know, and still you can actually disassociate yourself from your trading. You really want something, you know, a redundancy in place that's going to stop you from getting too emotional.
Yeah. And just on the, like I say, I keep on reiterating the point on account size, but
mm-hmm.
On trade size, sorry, but you know, if you're having to monitor it second by second, you traded too big. And then also not to, you know, if you've got a £2,000 account, $2,000 account, each mm-hmm. trade, I'm not going to put a specific number on it, but you should only be risking a smallish amount of your overall pot for every trade. You know, like, you're not going all in. Trading isn't a case of going all in on red or black and hoping it comes up. It's a case of kind of small incremental gains over a long period of time.
Yeah.
And it won't all be in a straight line. There'll be some dips, etc. But that's the way you've got to look at it. It's not kind of a get rich quick scheme.
No,
it isn't. And there's something that we talk about a lot in this podcast. I think a lot of people, like, you know, especially with the advent of mobile apps, you know, being able to trade on your phone. A lot of people come into trading thinking it's basically a more technical form of gambling, and it really isn't, as you say.
That kind of smartphone technology is kind of can be both a blessing and a curse. It's great that it gives us access and information at our fingertips, mm-hmm. and we can all be much better informed. But then you've also got to be careful that it's not, you know, it's not the thing you've just got, you're glued to. Every minute of the day.
Mm, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's very good advice.
Yeah, we talk a lot about the dangers of overtrading on your mobile. People can get sucked in too easily.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that's about it. We have all the questions we've got for you, Tom. Have you got anything else, Alison? You last ask Tom why we've got him here?
Not that I can think of right now. I think you've been very thorough. Thank you, Tom. And it was nice to, you know, hear a bit more about SpreadX and about spread betting. I think that was very valuable for our listeners. So thank you.
Oh, perfect. Well, thanks a lot for having me. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah,
it's good. Fantastic. Yeah, Tom, it was fantastic. We'll have to get you back on again soon.
Absolutely.
We can hear about your expansion.
Yes.
I'll be doing the next call from Dubai or Abu Dhabi and not rainy London.
Not rainy London. Superb. Yeah. Thank you so much again, Tom.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Cheers.